is our emeritus pastor, Reverend Barbara Davenport, who comes down from Bellingham to speak to us. And I just always thank my lucky stars for being in Skagit Valley and having Barbara's teachings and gifts part of this fellowship.
No, she's not the minister up there. Reverend Parle Beckel is the minister of the Bellingham Unitarian Fellowship, and when I'm not somewhere else, I worship there as well. And I think it was Laura that decided I should be minister emeritus, and I said, that's really code for being old. I had the privilege of serving this congregation for many years in the 90s, and I've retired three times, and every time you give me great gifts, so I cachet that. Anyway, I am thrilled to be among you. This congregation is the liberal religious light in Skagit County, and every one of your voices and actions counts. So, Pete, or somebody from the back, I tend to move around, and so then my voice gets lost. So raise your hand if I'm jumping around and I'm not speaking into the microphone. But is it okay now?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll see if I can stay still. The reading that I have selected is from Emily Dickinson. She was born in 1830 in Amherst, Mass., and was pretty reclusive, but wrote some incredible poetry. And one of her best-known poems is Hope. Hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul, that sings the tune without the words, and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash that little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. That could be the whole sermon, right? Anyway, so many of us are discouraged, and we heard some of the concerns today, either because of personal issues, health issues, national and world events. So the question I'm posing today is, can we find room for hope? And what are some stories of hope? We are barraged with negative news, so I thought we could all benefit from some good and hopeful news. That's not to say we should deny, ignore, or pretend that hard times don't exist. But perhaps we should begin with ourselves and acknowledge some of those personal losses and disappointments. So, a personal story. So, several of my friends have died in the last 6 months. I attended a funeral yesterday. And did any of you know Barbara Stockwell? She lives in a shelter. So, her funeral is this afternoon, I think. But among my losses is my best friend from college, Phyllis. So Phyllis and I graduated from college the same year, 1962. We got married the same year. We had our children the same year, first a boy and then a girl 3 years later. We got divorced the same year. Well, we have seen each other all these years. Sometimes she lived in Florida, and then we see each other on Cape Cod. But what I didn't realize until I thought about Phyllis's death is how those historical griefs build up. I mean, she's the only one that has shared those things with me. So right away, I called my friend from high school, who lives, her name's Dot, and she lives in Providence, Rhode Island, because I kind of felt that need to reach out to somebody who was still living that knew my past. But it made me realize how grief and despair can accumulate in ways that are hard to articulate. So balancing our losses, griefs, frustrations, and fears with hope is no easy task. But that's what I've set out to do this morning. So here I am trying to bring you some good news. I believe that bringing good news is essentially a religious endeavor. In fact, one UU minister defined religion as people telling stories of hope. People telling stories of hope. But, so I spent the last month looking for hopeful stories. Not that easy to find. Why is that? Because bad news is everywhere. And the media lives off of bad news, doesn't it? You know that saying, if it bleeds, it reads? Okay. And then we tend to repeat the bad news. So your homework is to try to tell the good stories, at least balance the bad news, which we do with joys and concerns, with the good news. Anyway, I'm going to recount some stories of hope and then sort of play around with, well, what does hope mean? So, for example, this past Tuesday, I attended our Planned Parenthood liberal clergy meeting in Bellingham. And Vincent Lucina, who most of you know, is our chaplain for Planned Parenthood for Washington, Idaho, Hawaii, Alaska, and I think he just took on somewhere else, Arkansas or something. Anyway, good luck. I don't know if it's Arkansas, but clearly, as you know, the bans and restrictions on abortion is not good news. But Linda McCarthy is the director of Planned Parenthood for Whatcom and Skagit. And she said, as bad news as that is, the good news is that it has gotten so bad that people are really joining together, coalescing to speak out against it. So I'm fond of saying, look for what is breaking through and what is breaking down. And it's good to remember the good stories. So another aspect of hope is to remember how things have changed. So this month marks the 50-year, I don't say anniversary, the Stonewallian Uprising in New York, in which gay men were accosted by the police. And yet, that really was the catalyst for the gay rights movement. And keep in mind that 15 years ago, the first gay marriage in the U.S. took place at Arlington Street Church in Boston. And now gay marriages are pretty much commonplace. And the New York Times even features them in their marriage section. And it's not only liberals that are involved in gay rights. So from the USA Today this past week, you know how they have news from every state? So this was from Oklahoma, Hulbert, Oklahoma. And this is a quote. Self-described straight country boy, Cody Barlow, believes that duct tape can really fix anything, including bigots. The college student recently decorated the tailgate of his pickup truck with a gay pride flag with the message, "Not all country boys are bigots." His Facebook post about his duct tape pride flag has been shared more than 135,000 times. So that's good news, isn't it? And as I said, I had fun looking for good news. Some of it bordered on the trivial. For example, the headline buried somewhere in the New York Times caught my eye. This was the headline. Missing bit of Stonehenge is returned after 60 years. The article went on to say, a 90-year-old retired man in Florida who, as a young person, had worked on the Stonehenge in England and had taken a small shard of the mammoth rock, decided to return it. And the article said that even this small piece might provide valuable information about the origins of how these massive stones found their way to England. So even the smallest act may have quite a ripple effect. And some less trivial news. More black women graduated from West Point this year than ever before. And amazing news about young people. So in our last issue of the UU World, they featured some young people who were leaders of the youth climate movement. So I think it was March 15th, there were hundreds of thousands of people, young people around the world, that skipped school on that Friday to demand immediate political action to slow climate change and save the planet. And among them were UU youth. So another example, I think, of a very thoughtful use. Sometimes we think, oh, youth are, you know, kind of self-centered and play on their devices. But here's a letter from a letter to the editor of the New York Times from an 11-year-old girl decrying an article that the Times had previously published about how bat mitzvahs, so bar mitzvahs are the coming of age ceremony for Jewish boys, and bat mitzvahs are for girls. Here's what she says. As an 11-year-old Jewish girl, I was bothered that an article about bat mitzvahs focused on how over-the-top parties, rather than the importance of chanting Torah and the importance of the ritual. I and most people I know are focused on more on the service than on the party. I felt embarrassed reading it, and I was even more embarrassed that other people were reading it. I feel fortunate to live in a time when young women participate in the rite of passage, and that I live in a place where I am free to study my faith. In the 70s, I was part of a consciousness-raising group for women, and we went around the room and talked about the first time we had experienced gender discrimination. And one of the women in my group was a Jewish twin, her brother. And she said of noticing gender discrimination, when my brother got bar mitzvahed and I got nothing. And for me in college, I was on the girls' ski team. The boys, of course, were supported by the Alumni Association, but the girls had bake sales. Do any of you remember Naomi Bann? She's a Holocaust survivor. Marcia's nodding her head. I had her speak here a couple times. And at one point, she held up a glass of water and she said, this is the best drink in the world. Because when she was in Auschwitz, all the rest of her family was killed. Her grandmother, her mother, her brothers, her father. And she survived. But they had no water in the camp. Oh, move in, thank you. They had no water in the camps for however long she was there. So she always expressed gratitude. I mean, we take water for granted, don't we? She always expressed gratitude. The best drink in the world. She and her husband Ernest came to Bellingham in the 1950s, and she was a sixth grade teacher. But she never spoke about her experiences in the concentration camp until after her husband Ernest died. So another example of kind of a sadness, a grief, but motivating somebody to do well. And I think I may have told you, when I was in divinity school, I was privileged to have a class from Elie Wiesel called Memory and Suicide. He's also a Holocaust survivor, and his dad died in the cell next to him. And he said in his early writings, "I'll never talk to God again." And yet, he went on to be a very well-known peace proponent. He won the Nobel Peace Prize, and it heals much divisiveness in the world. So in thinking about transforming our lives and the power of hope, two contemporary women come to mind, Michelle Obama and Melinda Gates. Both women have written recent books and exposed the painful parts of their past. So for Michelle Obama, she tells how her early years growing up in Southside Chicago was not easy, but it provided valuable lessons for how to live. And Melinda Gates, in her recent book, Moment of Life, How Empowering Women Changes the World, tells what it was like not to feel like her opinion mattered, because both of them lived kind of in the shadow of their more famous husbands. But we know that women can overcome these obstacles. And I also want to, you know, what do we say, give a shout out to the men that support women in finding their voices. For example, our beloved Barack Obama read Melinda Gates's book, and here's what he said about it. "It changed how I think about myself, my family, my work, and what's possible in the world. Most of all, it is a call for unity, inclusion, and connection." So sometimes, out of our greatest hardships and pain, hope springs. This past Thursday, I attended the graduation from Bellingham Technical College of my friend and refugee, Visha. She was one of 27 from the dental assisting program. She's a refugee from Afghanistan and has been in this country 3 years. She came with her two boys, who are now 11 and 13. Her husband is in Kabul, and he probably will never be able to come here, certainly not under the present administration. But Visha, out of the 27 graduates of dental assisting, and two of her classmates graduated summa cum laude. That's with a 3.9 or 4-point average. All three were not born in this country. And all three, for whom all three, English was not their first language. Visha's languages are Farsi and Hindi. So tell the good news about immigrants and refugees. How do we define hope? Hope is difficult to define. So sometimes we say what it is not. So some people say hope is not the same as optimism, because optimism suggests an attachment to the outcome. So you all have different definitions of hope, but I thought about that. So maybe hope doesn't have as its goal an expectation of a return on one's investment. I suppose another way to define hope is to say it's the opposite of despair. Did you know there's a website, despair.com? Look it up. So here's what it says about itself. If you type in despair.com, this is a quote. "At despair.com, we offer the cure for hope and surprisingly affordable prices." The website pokes fun at hope in clever and satirical ways and offers a variety of stuff like, quote, smile-killing posters. So one of the posters that caught my eye was entitled Wishes, and it went like this. When you wish upon a falling star, your dreams can come true. Unless it's really a meteorite hurtling to the earth, which will destroy all of life. Then you're pretty much hosed, no matter what you wish for. Unless it's death by meteor. Don't you wonder who thinks up this stuff? And gets paid for it. Anyway, another way to define an ephemeral concept like hope is by using a metaphor, which Dickinson does, likening it to something else. So she obviously likens it to a bird. So hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul. But think about how she describes hope. It doesn't ask anything of us, does it? I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, and yet, in extremity, it never asked a crumb of me. Another way to look at it, the Czechoslovakian imprisoned dissident, Václav Havel, is that how you pronounce his name? Went on to be the president of Czechoslovakia from 1993 to 2003. And as a writer of Czech literature, he is known for his plays, essays, and memoirs. And he died in 2011. And here's what Havel has to say about hope. Hope gives us the strength to live and continually try new things, even in conditions that seem as hopeless as ours do here and now. Well, I don't know when he wrote that, but it's pretty relevant for today. Let me say it again. Hope gives us strength to live and continually try new things, even in conditions that seem as hopeless as ours do, here and now. Well, I'd never really thought about that idea of trying new things. So the other day, I'm in the optometrist office because that piece of my eyeglasses fell off. And there used to be a woman who worked there named Renetta. And so I said to Brad, the other optician, well, where's Renetta? And he said, well, when she worked here, so she probably worked there 15 years, in the summer for her vacation, she went to Montana to work on a therapeutic horse camp. And she decided that she would just go live in Montana permanently. And I don't know whether she's getting paid for it or she's doing volunteer work. But she's at this therapeutic horseback riding camp in Montana. So maybe you want to embark on a new adventure as a possibility of hope. So hope may include many things. As Havel says, hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. So this sense of hope, I think most people feel, comes from outside us, but we take it into our hearts, right? So it's a nesting place in our souls. And I think it's up to each of us to create that nesting place for the thing with feathers. Blessed be.